Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Episode of the Championship Roundtable. I'm your host this week, Louis Shackshaft. You can reach the podcast by emailing at championshiproundtable@gmail.com. We're just going to go around the tables. If we can start with you, Matt, and just like to introduce yourself.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, I'm Matt Cutler. I am a sports journalist who specialises in the business of sport. Aston Villa fan, living in London. And that's it from me, really. If you want to my podcast, I should mention I run a sport business podcast called SB Weekly, and you can find me on Twitter at Matty Cutler.
Cheers for that, Matt. If we can come to you, Andy, as well, if you'd just like to introduce yourself.
Yes, hi, I'm Andy Buckley Taylor from Lincoln, season ticket holder at Derby County. You can find me on Twitter at BuckTaylor64, where there's also a link to my blog.
Thank you both for that, guys. My name's Louis Shackshaft. As I said, I represent Sheffield Wednesday on here, and I represent Sheffield Wednesday also for Shoot Football. I write for them, and I am your man also for Sheffield Wednesday statistics. We're just going to have a few minutes to discuss what's been happening at each club this week. If we want to start with you, Andy, if that's okay, if you'd just like to give us a brief on Derby.
Well, yes, return of the Mac. As our special edition the other day when Jake interviewed me, not convinced by the appointment. I'm one of these never go back people. And how has it gone? Well, we scraped a 1-0 victory against Leeds, who were probably feeling, you know, that they should have had something out of the game. Then a scrappy 0-0 home draw with Brentford. Yet again, pretty much the same sort of stuff that we was getting under Nigel Pearson. And then yesterday, go to Huddersfield. They're up there in the top six. They've had a good start to the season, despite losing a couple. And it seemed like we'd gone there for the draw. And we was hanging on, you know, to a draw until the 93rd minute when they nicked one. They did edge the game, although a draw would have been a fairer result. But I think it just goes to show how far we've fallen since last April. You know, when we're now, you know, playing for draws, it just goes to show how a team can fall from grace so quickly. It's very frustrating. I know it's early days of McLaren, but you know, Pearson didn't get many games. Three games into McLaren's return, I see very, very little improvement, and I think it's going to be a good long old season.
Andy, can I just jump in there? I watched the highlight show on Saturday night, and McLaren said that it's going to take time for the team to adapt to a new way of playing. What did he mean by that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I find it quite a remarkable comment, to be quite honest, because under McLaren and Clement and Wattle, they played 4-3-3. You know, we've had a dozen or so games under Pearson where the 4-4-2 was tried and didn't work because we didn't have the players to play it. Now, most of the players from the last time Steve McLaren was here are still with the club. You know, it shouldn't be rocket science going back to a 4-3-3 again. I know we've lost Chris Martin, which, you know, it's quite a big loss in the 4-3-3 system. But I think what McLaren ought to have said basically is the team's not strong enough to do the job. It's not strong enough to play in either of them systems. and it's going to be a right old slog till January, till we can bring somebody in. And it's not going to be Chris Martin coming back, because he's on a season loan to Fulham. They paid £2.5 to £3 million for this loan. And it's for him to come back to Derby in January, Fulham would have to say, we don't want him. Chris Martin would also have to say, I want to go back. And the past two or three games, he's now sort of like getting into his stride at Fulham. So, you know, I think Steve McLaren, he's probably found that he's bitten off more than he can chew this time.
You've beat me to it, actually, Andy. I was going to, one of the questions later on were going to be about McLaren. What's your general thoughts on McLaren going forward? Is the club like, we're wishing for somebody else, basically, or do you think going forward he may do the job?
I think you should look at something new. He did a very good job last time, until the speculation started in that March. He had us playing the best football I'd seen in 30 years. We're now currently playing the worst football I've seen since the early 1980s, when we got relegated. I think we should have gone down the Steve Bruce or Neil Warnock route, because I tell you what, I bet you Steve Bruce will get Aston Villa into the top six, and Cardiff as well under Neil Warnock. They're going to be closer to the top than the bottom. It's very worrying, actually, because I think there's only Rotherham and Nottingham Forest at the moment that are playing as bad as we are. But, you know, time will tell.
Yeah, it's quite interesting that you said that, actually, about, obviously, Warnock, etc., because I think they'd have both been a good shout, as would Bruce have been. But obviously, we'll come on to you now, Matt, if you'd just like to discuss Aston Villa this past week and your thoughts, mate.
Yeah, well, we did get Bruce, which unfortunately for Andy. But yeah, it's probably the first time I've come on this podcast being a little bit optimistic. I mean, so Steve Bruce has been in charge for three games now. We drawn one, won two, you know, our best run of form for, you know, a couple of, genuinely, you know, a year or two, which is depressing to say that, really. But anyway, I think, so, I mean, Bruce is, you always get a bit of an uplift with a new manager, or you quite often do. So I don't know quite know how long the honeymoon period will last, but it's, you know, it's looking good. It's looking good so far. We got to be, although I must say, in our first game against Wolves, Bruce's first game, we didn't play very well at all. And we were pretty fortunate to not concede a penalty and not have a man sent off and take the draw. But we seem to be sure it's the team, kind of from goalkeeper to striker, they seem to be just playing a lot better. And I think it's the cumulative effect of, maybe it's confidence, maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's just having that new person around the training ground that they've got maybe more respect for, or maybe he's putting his foot down. That they didn't have under Di Matteo, so it's all looking pretty positive, really. But we've got Birmingham City next weekend, and so derby matches can always be a little bit tasty. But we go into that, you know, with a good confidence that we, you know, could take at least a point.
What was the general consensus among fans before any football were played about Bruce, Matt? Was it quite positive anyway? I know, obviously, like you've just mentioned, you've got a big game coming up next week against Birmingham. Him coming from Birmingham and being there previously, has that got a negative effect? Or are you guys just up for Bruce, seeing what he can do? And generally, he's a good Championship manager. You're just going to crack on and see if time will tell with him, basically.
Yeah, the consensus has been pretty good, really, which is, it's funny. I mean, he's, so, okay, three or four managers ago, we had, obviously, Alec McLeish, who, a former Birmingham City manager as well. You know, back then, my memory's a bit hazy, but, you know, he wasn't a very popular appointment. I know, I read an interview that Keith Wynas, our chief executive, gave, and that they were monitoring kind of social media sentiment around, you know, from Villa fans, to see whether, you know, what they were saying about Bruce. Now, whether everyone would, I think if everyone was slating him, then maybe they would not have thought about hiring him. But but it's the fans, you know, even before we got some points together, they, you know, we seem to be getting on board. I don't know whether that's almost desperation, really. You know, we've had a line of such bad performances by our managers and by the team, really, that, you know, having a manager come in like Steve Bruce, who's done it before in the Championship, you know, with Hull and, well, even Birmingham City, with, you know, any number of clubs, I think we were pretty happy with it. I mean, he hasn't seemed to change much about the formation, although it's interesting here what Andy was saying. He hasn't mixed it up too much. It's still the same players playing in the same positions to a certain extent. Signs are good. And I don't know, it's a funny old league, isn't it, the Championship? We're like 6 points off the playoffs now. Admittedly 5 points off relegation, but, you know, if you string together a few wins, you can go from, you know, staring down the barrel to actually being pretty optimistic about reaching the playoffs in a matter of, you know, a matter of a month or so.
Yeah, thanks for that, Matt. I think, like you say, with Steve Bruce in charge, he's a very good Championship manager, and he'll definitely push you to the playoffs, or playoffs minimum, basically, I believe so. Anyway, it's strange because you guys have got a lot to talk about off the field this week. I haven't off the field. It's all been on the field, really. So it's been quite a decent week for a Wednesday. We've had 3 games in 7 days, starting with Huddersfield last week. We got the victory. We edged the game. To be honest, I thought we deserved to get the 3 points. The biggest thing for me was what went viral all on Twitter, etc. Is Ross Wallace, when he took the tactical note off Kujunja when Wagner gave him obviously the note, and that was quite amusing. Like I say, that went viral on Twitter. So that was probably the biggest thing what came from that game, other than the 3 points. We played Cardiff midweek. We managed to get a draw 1-1 away. Padil scored after we went 1-0 down from a Whittingham free kick. We played well. We were away from home. I know Cardiff are near the bottom, but I'd always potentially take a point away from home anyway. The only disappointing thing was we had all the possession. I think we had 72% possession, which is a massive amount. We couldn't finish the game off, but I can't complain, because then we had QPR yesterday, and again, we edged the game. We just did enough. We deserved to win. We showed signs of quality in parts. There were a few moments where we could have slipped up towards the end and gave them a goal, but ultimately, in 7 days, we've got 7 points out of 9, so I can't complain at this moment, and we've slowly climbing that table, and we've managed to get into fifth position. So hopefully good things will come from that. Starting with the next topic, what we're going to discuss is what 3 changes would you like to make in the Championship in its current form? So this will be quite interesting. So obviously I've got 3 key points. If you want to start with you again, Andy, and just discuss your 3 major things you'd like to discuss in the Championships and changes you'd like to make.
The changes I'd like to make. It was a very difficult one, this. I got the questions whilst I was out watching my son play this afternoon. A change I would like to see is the playoff system. I think there should be more money spread about in the game. I'd like to see the top 3 automatically promoted, and then the next 3 into the playoffs. And the next 4 into the playoffs. What I would do, the team that finishes 4th, option A, team that finishes 4th straight to the final, then your teams that are 6th and 7th to play each other, and then the winners of that to play the team that finished 5th. Option B would be 4th to play 5th. These are one-off games, by the way. And then 6th to play 7th. Now, the winner of 4th and 5th goes to Wembley. The loser plays the winner of the other game, and then they, you know, go on to Wembley. I think there should be a definite advantage in the playoffs to the teams that finish higher. What other changes would I like to see? I don't know. I mean, the one change I would like to see, the Football League don't really control it, and it's this transfer window business. I hate the transfer windows. They you end up with clubs buying last minute, panic buys, transfer fees become inflated. And I think that's a contributing factor to the mess that some clubs get themselves in. The final one, the financial fair play. Now, I agree to a certain extent of having control over clubs not getting themselves into serious debt. But what I would like to see, I would like to see a bit of adjustment whereby you're not limited by your losses. But if you can, if the owner can prove that he can cover all the losses made, then I think that embargo should be waived.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, they're very good points, Sam, to be honest. I was going to kind of mention the playoff one as well, because I knew that one were going to come up. So I've stayed away from that in my key points. But they're all well-made points, very interesting. I've got three completely different ones, so that'll be good going forward. But if we come on to, obviously, you, Matt, as well, and we'd just like to discuss your points as well that you'd like to put across.
Yeah, I mean, I interpreted the question a little bit more... not necessarily a structural thing, but the slight issue for me is that I'm 30, and like, this is the first real season I've known Villa outside the Premier League, so this is my first taste of Championship football. So I'm kind of coming in with a Premier League background. I was at the Villa's first away win in 400 or whatever days it was away at Reading. Last week in midweek, and I've noticed this on TV as well. I think the Football League should, if it can, try and do more stuff to encourage sellout crowds. I mean, at Reading in particular. I mean, I'm only raising this point because I was there. I think it was 20,000 people in the stadium. Still plenty of empty seats and 5,000 Villa fans. But watching on the highlights over the weekend. On TV, just empty seats everywhere. I don't really know why that is. Is it a ticket pricing thing? Is it I don't know. I don't know the answer. But surely it's within everyone's interest to try and sell out stadiums as best they can. Is it more kind of initiatives to get kids along? Is it free tickets? Is it who knows what? It just makes kind of complete business sense to have, sell out crowds where possible with this. You know, more people in the stadium, more people spending money on merchandise, on hot dogs, on beer, and all stuff like that. Sorry, I went on a bit of a rant then.
To be honest, I'm going to butt in with there because one of mine is based on prices as well. So I'll just link that with one of my key points that I've put down: the away ticket prices. But you can link that with home ticket prices as well if you like to, save an argument. Because obviously, what the Premier League did, they add the clause, didn't they, where you can't spend more than £30 on away tickets now in the Premier League. And I think something like that should be brought into the Championship, where there's a cut-off point, whether that's home tickets or away tickets. I don't think it really matters, because like you say, at the end of the day, you want to see more people coming through the turnstiles and watching the game. So whether it's an away ticket at £25 cut-off, that would be fantastic, or making a home ticket at £30. I mean, from a Sheffield Wednesday fans' perspective, we're one of the main culprits this season, where away tickets are over the £30 mark, somewhere between the £30 and £35, £36. So I do believe that what they did in Premier League was a good thing, and it should be brought down into the Championships also, just to not only be cheaper for the fans, but to also engage in more people coming through into the stadium. So yeah, that's a good point. Also, have you got two more as well, Matt?
Yeah, just on that, it could be as well increasing away ticket allocations. I mean, I know a home team obviously wants to have an advantage by having more fans there, but and again, you know, I'm talking as a Villa fan, and we've got quite a big fan base. It's really difficult for us to get away tickets just because of the restrictions on it. So I don't know whether that's another option. The other thing I wanted to say was, and again, this could be a specific thing to Villa, but I've noticed a lot of the games we've played this season, there seems to be this tactic where managers play really deep football and try and play real possession football. I don't particularly know why, because it happened in the last two games against Villa, and both Reading and Fulham lost the games. I know Jaap Stam had it where his back four and the goalkeeper were just passing the ball constantly around them. I don't know whether it's to get the opposition team to push up. It could be a specific thing to Villa and our perceived attacking threat. But just on this game that on Fulham on the weekend, Fulham were away from home, had 66% possession and zero shots on target. So I don't quite know what the tactics were then. I mean, it means that it's not a very good spectator proposition if the teams are playing that type of football. But again, I mean, I'd be interested to know your guys' take on that. It could be just a Villa thing.
Do you want to say a word on that, Andy? Because to be honest, I kind of agree with Matt, where I don't really know the answer to that one. It is a strange one. I don't know if it's like the Championship, even though any team can beat each other. I don't know if it's just because there's a divide between the top half and the bottom half, and the teams in the bottom half do play the deeper roles when they're away against teams in the top half. I don't know. Have you got a take on that, Andy, at all? Or?
I don't know. I mean, what I did find is, going back to the first spell under Steve McLaren, after so long, certain teams did adapt their tactics. 4-3-3 is an attacking formation anyway. We were ripping teams apart, and there were certain managers, and a particular one who really did his homework was Ian Holloway, who sat his team very deep. He effectively played a six-man defence to frustrate us, and then tried to catch us out on the counter-attack. I mean, I actually think that if your opponents are coming and playing very deep, it must be a compliment to your own attacking football, you know. But, you know, we don't like to see it, but at the end of the day, it's a results business, and managers will do whatever it takes to get a result.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, to be honest, saying it's a compliment to the attacking team, because it's like you say, if you are a weaker side, they are generally just going to park the bus. So I think, yeah, like I say, you've hit the nail on the head there, and it's just a compliment to teams that are slightly better, and teams that are weaker are going to go to away grounds and try and just pick up a point, aren't they? And that's the way forward, and that's a lot of teams who are in the bottom six, they tend to do that. But have you got a final point on that, Matt, then, what you'd like to discuss?
Just a last kind of one of three. It'd be good to, I mean, I do quite like the Channel 5 highlight show, obviously, that we get in the UK, that rounds up the weekend's fixtures in an hour. But I'd like to have somewhere free where you could watch a bit of an extended highlights of the game, of your game of the weekend. I mean, maybe that exists somewhere and I don't know about it, but yeah, that I find that a little bit frustrating.
Yeah, that is frustrating, to be honest. It's I mean, generally I watch, if I've not gone to the game, I just watch the highlights on YouTube when they've been put up by the Sheffield Wednesday Twitter handle, basically, and I get 10 minutes of highlights. But yeah, I know what you're saying. That is frustrating, especially coming down from the Premier League like Aston Villa have done. You're going to not see as much of the game, especially probably away from home. But I'll just move on to my points quickly. So we've discussed ticket prices, which was one of mine. I think there should be a barrier on that and like a cutoff point. One of mine I want to discuss was goal line technology. I know obviously they brought that into the Premier League. That obviously I understand why it's in the Premier League, but I think it's got to a point where in this modern day and age that it should be not just in the Championship, it should go right down to probably League Two also. I know it costs a lot of money, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of money up for grabs, and it can be the difference between promotion and relegation at the end of the day, a couple of goals. And if you're missing out or gaining on either of those, then goal line technology can play a massive part. The other frustrating one for me, and this is from a selfish point of view, because this probably will never happen, but I'd like to see Championship games during the international break, because there's nothing more frustrating than I'm just bored of watching England. I don't know whether you guys have got the same take on that, but you know, there's nothing worse than when England are playing Slovenia and that's the only game that's playing at the weekend, and you just wish that there were 3, 4, 5, 6 Championship games being played, even if it weren't your team. And I understand there's players in the Championship that are called up on international duty, but what about the teams who've maybe only got 1 or 2 players maximum going on international duty? And we've all got big enough, you know, squads to replace those players on a weekend. So I understand the international break, but when England, like I say, were playing Slovenia and Malta the other week, I was that bored, and it were like, come on, let's have just a few Championship games being played. So that's a frustrating thing for me. But we'll move on to the next topic, which is, and I'm sure, Matt, you've got a lot to say about this one, obviously, with Villa coming down from the Premier League. But how big is the gap between the Premier League and the Championship, and will it grow in the future? So shall we start with you, Matt, if you'd like to discuss that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the bottom of the Premier League and the top of the Championship, I mean, this may sound like an obvious thing to say, is probably not that different. I think they'd probably be pretty interchangeable if you had a kind of like a six, you know, at the end of the season, a six team league of the top, you know, the bottom three of the top three of the Championship. If I was going to predict the future, I think the gap is either going to remain the same or get bigger as more money flows into the Premier League, purely because, you know, the team that finishes bottom of the Premier League this year is going to get, I think, about 100 million quid from just their share of broadcast rights. And then 3 years of parachute payments. So they've got that money to reinvest in their squad, which means that you're going to see the same set of teams going up, going down, unless, and this is almost the bigger lesson, interesting what Andy was saying about financial fair play. I think the only way that will change is if one of these Championship clubs gets bought by, you know, a foreign owner, which is happening. You know, there's Chinese owners of Wolves, Birmingham City, I think Forest are getting a new investor, are they? And they spend some serious amount of cash within what they can spend. I think that's the only way that we're going to see the status quo, shaken up a little bit. And you know, if you look at a team like Villa, where we've been relegated, and Tony Gea's bought the club, and I think we've spent about sixty million quid in the transfer window, something insane like that in the summer transfer window. So just championship teams can't compete with that. So it's kind of sad in a way, really. But I'd be amazed if we have situations where, I say Bournemouth's quite a good example, or Blackpool a few years ago. I just think that those will happen less and less as Premier League money goes up and up.
Yeah, I've got to tend to agree. To be honest, I made exactly the same points as you. I believe that the bottom six in the Premier League are not dissimilar to the top six in the Championship. Like you say, that if they were to interchange, it wouldn't be dissimilar. And I also believe, obviously, with the amounts of money that's being spent by some clubs now, like pretty much all the Premier League clubs are spending millions, and some clubs are spending millions on players I've never even heard of before now, which is crazy. But then obviously you've got a few Championship clubs who are able to spend a lot of money at the minute. But I think you're right when you say that the smaller clubs and luckily like your West Broms and your Stokes and teams like that have got to the Premier League at the right time before this crazy spending's come along. And like you said, Blackpool were a very good example. You're not going to see a small team really now who've got small ground and infrastructure and little money ever going to be making it into the Premier League, which is disappointing to see. But have you got the same take on that, Andy?
I think overall it's going to be, you know, the teams with the money, which are the relegated clubs. You do get the odd exception to the rule. Bournemouth, if they stay up this season, because, you know, if the bottom team's getting 100 million, they're obviously getting more than that. And it's going to be a case of speculate to accumulate. I actually think that over the next few years, the whole setup, the structure is going to change anyway, because Championship is now becoming more and more popular with our friends over at Sky Sports. Now, what I'm wondering myself is, will the Championship become Premier League 2? I know it's been talked about and there's been mutterings about it for years, but I can actually see Championship becoming Premier 2, probably reduce it to 20 clubs like the Premier League, and then the Football League will have Leagues 1, 2. There will be a League 3, I would presume, but it will be... you know, the bottom end of League Two plus your top non-league teams. But saying, when you're talking about the money issue, well, Derby County, the last couple of seasons, have spent £25-30 million on players. And I think they're, you know, we're the perfect example that money doesn't always buy you the success that you crave. So, I mean, I think overall the gap is there. I think it will widen, but, you know, every now and then you get a club with a good, tactically astute manager like, say, Eddie Howe, and then there is the possibility of a team like that breaking through.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that myself, to be honest. It's interesting, like you said, about Premier League 2 and whatever, because one of the points I were going to make in the changes, not that I'd like to see, but I can see the Championship being reduced to a 20-team league as well. And I think that may be something that does come up, whether it's in a couple of years or even 10 years' time, I don't know. But I can see that with, like you say, all the money, what's being spent and TV rights nowadays. So that'll be interesting to obviously keep our eyes on in the future. But moving on to the next topic is player watch. So we'd like to discuss who has played well and who has disappointed recently at your clubs. So if you want to go first, Matt, at Aston Villa.
I think it's Jonathan Codger. Obviously, we signed him right at the tail end of the transfer window from Bristol City for, you know, from what looked, again, you know, talking about money for, I think it was about 15 million quid, which I think many people at the time thought was a crazy amount of money for a player who's still quite young and hadn't really... performed in the Championship, sure, but, you know, even if you're talking about 15 million quid for a good Championship player, that's just an insane amount of money. But he's really, you know, he scored 3 and 3 now. He's just a really decent player. I don't think, Di Matteo or Bruce really worked out what his position is. He's kind of played almost as an attacking midfielder on the wing, you know, on the right-hand side of a kind of the front three of a 4-3-3. I think there's probably an argument to say he could play centrally. But he's just very good on the ball, very strong, great touch. He's just exactly the type of player we needed to play or to compete in the Championship. So I've been really happy with him. And I think he could end up scoring, being, you know, nearish the top of the top goal-scoring charts by the end of the season. Disappointment has been, without a doubt, Jedinak, who we signed from Palace again in the transfer window. He's just been dreadful, really. I know quite a few Palace fans who really rate him, and they were a little bit annoyed that he went over to Villa, particularly on, I think, I don't know whether it was on a free or just for a couple of million quid. They thought he was really good in the Championship for Palace. Great distributor of the ball, calm on the ball. But he's just, well, ever since he started for Villa, he looked like his legs have gone. Gives away the ball all the time. He plays the odd nice pass, but that's about it. And he keeps on getting pulled off at half time. I don't know whether So obviously still playing for Australia, and in the international break just gone, you know, flying the other side of the world to play in a match. And actually, funnily enough, I know someone who was at the, I think Australia were playing Japan maybe, in the last international break, and a friend of mine emailed me to say he was there watching it and sent me a photo. And underneath the photo just said Jedinak is playing dreadfully. So he's getting stick in the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere.
To be honest, I was looking up Aston Villa before we came on the podcast, Matt. It's a strange one because I can't work out Aston Villa this season. So I've come up with a few points that I'd like to make, because statistically, Jordan Ayew and Jonathan Codger, basically they're up there with the best players in the league this season. So before Bruce has obviously come in, and I know he got a victory at the weekend, has it just been simply the defence that's been letting you down? Because another thing that I found was that Aston Villa are top statistically, and they've won more aerial duels than any other team in the league. They've won 58% of their aerial duels. But then they've also got the worst booking ratio, and they've had 40 yellow cards already this season. So I'm like, they're just a mixed bag of like emotions for me at Aston Villa, and I can't work out what kind of team they are.
Yeah, it's been we haven't had a settled team, which I think would have been part of it. So talking about the, you know, AU and Codger, we haven't quite worked out what our right front three or two or whatever the formation we want to play is. So, you know, if we play Rüdiger Stead up front, who, you know, a proven championship scorer, with, you know, great in the air, strong. If we play with him, it's almost a different way of playing. If we played two up front, which could be AU and Codger, for instance. So I think Gestead. So Bruce is trying to mix it up a little bit, and he has in the last, you know, in his first three games. In terms of the defence, we've been pretty unfortunate with injuries. So I mean, Delayed did his knee in, so he's out for the season when he was going to be our first choice right back and played the first few games. Elphick came in at the start, looked okay, and then played a couple of dodgy games and then got injured, so he's been out. Chester looks good and looks solid, but then also our left back situation is unresolved. So it's really hard to know what our settled team is. So that's a very long-winded way of me saying I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I think that's just, like you say, it's going to take time, and now Bruce is there, then he's probably going to have to know in next month or so who his best 11 or 12 and 13 players are and rotate a couple. But I think that'll, like we said, that'll just come with time. What about yourself then, Andy? A player that's disappointed and a player that's played well recently over the past week or so?
Well, I'll start with a positive. over the past few fixtures, going back to Nigel Pearson, he dropped Jason Shackle a few games ago. Shackle had been a fan's favourite, but this season, his performances early season haven't been up to scratch. And Pearson brought in Alex Pearce, and in the meantime, Shackle got injured in training. Now, Alex Pearce came in, not this pre-season, last pre-season. I don't think he played a league game for us last season. He played in the odd cup game. The Reading fans were saying, yeah, he's okay, but, you know, nothing special and whatever. And in fact, I think we sent him back out on loan to Reading last season. But anyway, he's come in at the expense of Shackle, and he's held his place well. And to be quite honest, in the recent games, Pearce has probably been our best player. He looks very composed on the ball. His distribution is good. And going from the interviews he's given to the local radio, seems a very nice guy as well. And he does have a bit of leadership about him, which we have been lacking. And a surprising choice, but thoroughly deserved. And definitely our best player over the past few games. Looking at the other side, the disappointing player, I wonder if you can guess who I'm going to say. This season's been Tom Ince. When he initially came to Derby, very effective. He was a bit hit and miss last season, but he was still a match winner on his day. This season just hasn't been at the races at all. Looks very ineffective. His free kicks, he's normally deadly with the free kick. His free kicks haven't been up to scratch. There just looks to be a certain disinterest with him. And what I would also question is, are we playing him in his most effective position? You've got a left-footed player here who I think is better off playing behind the striker, playing down the right wing. But there you go. But definitely we should be getting more, you know, from a £5 million player than what we have been doing.
I thought you were going to mention Tom Ince actually there. I had made a note of him, but obviously because you've discussed him, can I ask you also about Will Hughes and just see how he's doing this season? Because I know obviously in the past in transfer windows, he's been linked with very big clubs in the Premier League, and he's been touted as, you know, one of the next best players or English players, you know, to go on and potentially play for England. So how's he doing this year?
Well, I'll start off by saying that Will Hughes is a better player than Jeff Hendrick, who was sold for £10.5 million. Earlier on in the season, he was a bit playing deeper than we'd like to see him. We like to see him push forward, you know, to support our attackers. But we've got a scenario at the minute. Our defence is really missing George Fawn. We finally got him back last season. For a full season after the ACL, but he broke his ankle towards right at the end of the season. And what we have been doing is sort of like making do, pushing people like Will Hughes back, but you know, that takes away some of our attacking threat. To me, he always puts in that 100%. When you see him on the ball, he's composed. He doesn't make the errors that other players make. I just think we're not using him to, you know, maximise his ability at the moment. But hopefully, if Fawn is back before Christmas, so we can get the best out of Hughes. But make no mistake, he's the best player in that Derby County side. And players who are on the same level round him, he'll shine. And like I said before, you know, if Jeff Hendrick's worth £10.5 million, you know, what's Will Hughes worth?
Yeah, exactly. He's always been one to watch out for, hasn't he, Will Hughes? Is the type of player where I think he'd always do well in probably any team. And I think if he did step up to the Premier League, then he won't look out of his depth. I know he's still only young, but hopefully and potentially it will be, you know, when he gets to 24, for example, he'll be playing for England and or thereabouts. I'll quickly obviously discuss Sheffield Wednesday and the player watch. He played well and someone who's disappointed. So a player watch, because we've had a good week, it was quite tough to pick someone. There was a couple of players what stood out really, but I'm going to actually go for David Jones. The reason I'm going to go for him is because he's had three games this week where he's been very consistent. He's been playing a holding midfield role, and it's not really his typical role. He's more of a going forward type of box to box midfielder. But he's been playing the holding midfield role, and I think that's generally why we've had a good week is because last season a lot of our success, especially at home, was when we had two centre-backs with a holding midfielder. And until this last month, we've been playing typically Bannon and Lee in midfield, who both like to go forward. So David Jones has been playing that role as such. And he's just been, you know, giving that extra help to our two central defenders. And in the three games we've played this week, we have only conceded the one goal. And I think even though he looks ineffective because he doesn't have too much of the ball, but the role he's playing, I think, like I say, that's helping us a lot not to concede goals. So I'm going to give that to David Jones this week. He's had a fantastic week and hope that continues. The player that's disappointed is actually, I'm going to go for a player that's not even played. which is surprising. But the reason I've picked Almon Abdi is because we paid around £4 million for him in the transfer window. He came from Watford and he was playing Premier League last season. So there was big expectation around the guy. He was dropped from our full squad yesterday against QPR, and our manager even stated that he hasn't adapted to our style of play whatsoever, and he needs to build his strength up and obviously in training before he can even think about coming back into the squad or the first team. So I'm going to go for Abdi as a disappointment, just because I really thought this guy were going to come to our club, nail his himself into the first team and be playing week in, week out and be a very effective assist and goal scorer for us. But we've just literally not seen any of that this season. He had a couple of games pre-season where he looked decent, but other than that in the league this year, he's been far from effective. So we'll move on to the next topic, which is match previews and predictions. This is a very tasty one because we've got a few affairs me and Andy are going to obviously discuss, which is Derby v Sheffield Wednesday. But we'll start with the big Birmingham derby. So Birmingham against Aston Villa this weekend. If you want to discuss that one, Matt, and your prediction for the game also.
Well, obviously Villa, Blues lost away at Burton on Friday night. And Villa, winning two games off the trot. So we are the form team. But as everyone knows, form goes up the window in these derby games, particularly the Birmingham derby. So I'd be annoyed if we didn't take a point, but actually I would take a point now if you ask me that. So hard to predict, particularly at St Andrews at a 12, and at a midday kickoff. Well, not that that makes any difference. Villa. Man for man, Villa will be the better team. I think even a hardened Birmingham City fan would admit that. But could be anything could happen, as anyone who's watched a Birmingham derby over the past kind of decade or so will know. But if I had to put my neck on the line, I'll go for a 1-1 draw, two penalties.
Yeah, it's so hard to call these games, aren't they? Especially derby games. It's like you wouldn't know where to obviously put your money if you were betting, and it's anything could happen on the day, like you say, especially these type of games when crowded behind both teams and all it takes is a sending off or an own goal and it could just go anyway. But another tasty affair, obviously, Andy, I've got Sheffield Wednesday have got your team away, Derby. What are your thoughts and predictions for that game, mate?
Well, if you've got a half-decent defence, we're going to struggle. I know we've got Matty Vidra in the middle. He gets himself into some really good positions, but it's the service of getting the ball to him. We just, as soon as we get into the final third of the field, we just don't seem to have a clue at the moment. I think you'll be favourites for this, but I don't think it'll be a thrashing or anything like that. Because we haven't, despite not scoring a lot of goals, we haven't leaked a lot of goals in either. If you go into the iPro Stadium at the minute, you're half expecting to watch a 0-0 game. I would like to think that we could, get a win here. If we do win, it will be from a set piece. It will be a free kick or a penalty, because we're just clueless in front of goal. My gut feeling is that Sheffield Wednesday will win by a goal to nil. But there you go. It's so frustrating at the minute.
Yeah, it is a tough one to call, and like you say, I know we're in top six, and are you 22nd in the league or 21st in the league? So like you said, you'll be right in saying that Wednesday will be the favourites. But again, it's always difficult going to Derby. It's always a tough place to go. And I've done a bit of research before I came on here, and I've found, like you said, that it's strange that Derby are 21st in the league, yet they've only conceded 11 goals in 14 games. And it's like, So obviously they're not scoring the goals either. So it's, if I were putting my neck on the line, I would go 1-1 as well, like Matt did with Birmingham Villa. I'd take a point at Derby, and I know we should be favourites, but we seem to have to create 5 or 6 chances at the minute to actually score a goal. And with you guys not conceding many, I would go with the draw. What's you, if you were a betting man, Andy, what would you go with?
If I was going to put a guess the score bet, I would say 1-0 Wednesday. If it's a draw, it'll be 0-0.
Well, yeah, that's, to be honest, you know what, beforehand I were going to write down either 0-0 or 1-1, and to be honest, away from home, I would take a point anyway. And I think for us this season, if we are going to get anywhere near automatic, and I know we're pushing for those playoffs at the minute, but if we can take a point away from home and potentially then just get 3 points at home, then I'll quite happily take a draw at Derby on Saturday. So that'll be very interesting. But I'm afraid, guys, it's time to wrap up in this week's Championship Roundtable. If you'd like to drop a quick line where we can catch you, and if you're currently undergoing any projects that you're involved in, if you'd just like to start, Matt.
Yeah, so you can catch me on Twitter at Matty Cutler. My podcast, again, is, yes, if you're interested in the business of sport, check it out. It's called SB Weekly, and that's at SB Weekly Podcast.
Thanks for that, Matt. And if you'd just like to drop a line, Andy, also, just where we can catch you.
Yeah, you can catch me on social media at Twitter, at BookTaylor64, and there's a link on there to my blog, which is quite a depressing read at the moment.
Thanks for that, guys. I've been your host today, Louis Shackshaft. You can catch me also on Twitter at Louis Shackshaft. I represent, obviously, Sheffield Wednesday for Shoot Football. And by the end of the week, I should have an article coming out, which is 5 reasons why Sheffield Wednesday should be looking for automatic promotion this season. But yeah, that's it from us, guys. I'd like to thank Matt and Andy for joining us. And thanks to everyone for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.